It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it is another edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Hi there, Daniel.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, you're talking about something that you have discussed before, but kind of a refresher course on personalities and distances, and again, how this mainly relates to marriage.
Somewhat marriage. I just wanted to give a quick snapshot of, you know, what I do in terms of a lot of counseling, what a lot of counseling is about. And personalities come into play a lot. We know, you know, a lot about personalities. Some of it is guesswork. A lot of it's guesswork, maybe, but I wanted to talk a little bit about that. And then actually how personalities work together and a little bit about distances in relationships, which is particularly of particular importance with marriage relationships, but also other kinds of relationships apply. It's applicable to as well. Okay. So let's kick it off talking about personalities. I think that a lot of people believe, Christians in particular, those of us that believe, I'm assuming there's a lot of them listening because
that's our primary audience.
That's right.
Yes.
So, and I've heard people say, well, aren't we born with personalities and, or are they developed, personality developed? Certainly, there are scriptures that come to mind having to do with, our having been fashioned. Remember, some Psalms come to mind immediately, having been fashioned and the foreknowledge of God, those who he's foreknown. And so, it's hard to argue that, that, at least God doesn't, know and, destine us in some way. So just what his role is in personality is maybe not clear, but there's certainly scripture to indicate that it's not evolution. On the other hand, there's observable evidence of the impact of nurturing.
Nature-nurture argument.
Yeah, the right. And it continues to be an argument, and it's, you know, we usually wind up saying it's a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that clearly both play a role, and both are in the hands of God. Whether God foreknew and gave you that personality while you were in the womb, or whether he foreknew that your experiences and your choices and that you would become that, it's a difference that doesn't make a difference, because both of those things are in God's hands, and he knows you, your personality. And so to argue the point doesn't really get us anywhere. It's a difference that doesn't make a difference, as I say. But let's look at the development of personality, because even if God has destined a particular, known you before you were in the womb and destined you, there's still a development of your personality, and that development has to do with experiences in life, interactions with other people. Has somewhat to do with genetics, because it's like I use the example of if a husband and wife have, for example, two daughters, and one is tall and attractive, and the other one is short and plump, they're going to have different experiences in life. Their interactions with people will be different. Mm. They'll be given different choices in life, and so their response to that is going to be part of the development of their personality. So you could say, does the genetics play a role? Yeah, it certainly does. Or you could imagine two sons being born, one slight, needing glasses, and the other one big and bulky, and you can imagine them going to school and having all kinds of different experiences one from the other. And certainly the genetics and that, those extreme examples, those genetics would play a role. But the genetics play a role in hand with life experiences and nurturing. Mm-hmm. So the development of a personality probably could very likely begin even in the womb, because the infant shares the mother's neurology, So if the mother, for example, if it's a hostile environment and the mother has a lot of adrenaline going a lot of the time, and even some at a certain stage, the child can even hear in the womb, not at the way we hear with direct airwaves on our eardrums, but they hear in the womb, and they could recognize, say, for example, loud noises, and then the mother's response to that loud noise with a rush of adrenaline. The child could actually be born with a fear or a precaution to loud noises or even certain voices. So it could start there, and then as you fast forward, the child is needing to survive, and it's about survival, and it's about safety and security. And so the child begins to learn quickly behaviors that solicit certain responses from their environment. Some children cry more to get the bottle. Some children are more quiet. If you fast forward again to the playroom, some kids share their toys, some kids don't. Some kids stand in the corner, some kids take over. And then later in life, those become CEOs, and then some become counselors and radio technicians. Right. And various things. And all these choices have to do with safety and security. And they have to do with, these become our personality. Mm-hmm. So personalities. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I was going to say I first heard this phrase done by you, actually. I've always heard the term personality disorder. But you call it a disordered personality. And right. That's part of what gets us into trouble too in relationships.
Yeah, personalities. So at their core, personalities are defense mechanisms. That is, it's all about safety and security for me. And so obviously, we make choices to that give us a sense of safety and security. So personality disorders, as you were bringing out, the APA has these like 10 personality disorders, which is...
That's all?
10, yeah. Well, and so interesting that you should say that, because every personality disorder, if you look in the text, every one of these 10 personality disorders, as you're reading through the disorder, there's a section called the diagnostic... differential criteria. And what that is, the differential criteria is because, in fact, it's more of a continuum than it is 10 categories. And so in order to make the categories work, they have to have sections where they tell you why it's not something else, even though it could appear to be something else. That's what the criteria is about. So the difference between personality disorders and disordered personalities is the model of personality disorders tends to suggest that there are 10 ways to be unhealthy and everybody else is healthy. But in my experience, everybody can be unhealthy. It depends on – it's circumstantial sometimes. Mm-hmm. The sky is falling and, Henny Penny goes nuts. And so so a personality can be disordered. What do I mean by a personality becoming disordered? It becomes tightly wrapped around the defense mechanism. Because what we're trying to do, and when we talk about healing personalities, and people say there's a lot who believe that personalities can't be changed. And in fact, if a counselor is counseling someone and billing an insurance company, they can't put down a personality disorder as the presenting problem because they won't get paid. The reason is because the insurance companies believe that, because they're following the APA's lead, they believe that personalities can't be changed. It's an existing, pre-existing condition. It can't be medicated. It can't be changed. It is who you are, so they're not going to pay someone to sit in your office. They're not going to pay
you. That's really not a biblical idea, though, because the Bible does say you can change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why so often, I don't know what you think of, like personality tests, Myers-Briggs, mm-hmm. DISC assessments, some of these things that kind of pigeonhole people into certain, this is how you deal with this person because this is their personality type.
Right.
Is there something to that, or is that kind of a cop-out?
Well, both. I think that the way they come up with these personality tests is they ask batteries of, first of all, they have a determined outcome. So A lot of these tests began with research in schizophrenia. Say, so you have the patient there, and they have a certain, they are what they are. They're either paranoid or something like that. So you create a battery of questions that this person, the paranoid person, would answer a certain way. And then you test that with other people, and if they answer the same way that this schizophrenic answered, then you would say, well, you know, that would be, or if they follow the certain criteria. That's the basis of a lot of these personality things. Of course, they're not used on people that are schizophrenics, but they use the same model where they have a determined outcome. I want to put you in one of these quadrants, and this is what these quadrants look like. You know, you're the Myers-Briggs or the numerous other ones that have these quadrants. And so they have the quadrants are predefined. And so we just create questions that tend to put people in one of these quadrants. So you'd say it rings true to people who find themselves in these quadrants, but in a way it was predetermined. And the difficulty is that people identify with them and say, now I'm this.
Right.
And they get
and you got to deal with me because I'm this.
Yeah. And so you have to, so that's the problem, I think, with those with those models. The healing, yes, I believe that disordered personalities can be healed and can be changed. The depth of the hurt and the depth of the dysfunction certainly factors into that, because people can get so wrapped around their defense mechanisms that they can't relate to other persons. Every other person is suspect. Every other person is a threat. Every other person is going to take advantage, something like that. And so the irony is, or the paradox rather, is that the healing of personalities requires interaction with other persons. It requires relationships. If a person is going to change their or heal their personality, or let's say take advantage of shore up the strengths of their personality and overcome the weaknesses of their personality, what they're going to need to do is get into relationships. And it's particularly in three areas that we can objectively do this. We learn to empathize. That is, I'm interested in another person's experience to the place where it has a physiological impact on me, a physiological impact. Now, that's a choice I make. I can choose to be that vulnerable, that empathetic, so that that person's experience actually has an effect on me. Empathy, shared reality, that's similar to empathy, and shared boundaries, the rules that make the relationship work. So these are things that I talk to people about in marriage counseling, but obviously relationships, of which marriage is a very unique relationship. But in relationships, talking to people about being empathetic, sharing reality, sharing boundaries as a way of healing their personality or allowing them to venture out from their defense mechanisms and meet other people who have ventured out from their defense mechanisms. And then you have this kind of overlap, which is their relationship potential, where they're able to share with some degree of vulnerability. Not all relationships are the same, but some degree of vulnerability. And so that works toward trust and and healing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, looking at personalities, moving into distances, we're going to be talking maybe more about how these affect marriage relationships in particular. But, of course, this information works in all kinds of relationships. And if people need help with their relationships and maybe marital relationships, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, the phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, where you'll be able to hear this these shows again if you choose. I have offices Kirkland Edmonds, also doing a lot of Zoom for people that live far out or have tough schedules and they need to schedule something.
Yeah, that's virtual. A great option now. Okay, back to with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Daniel reviewing some of his basics of the kinds of work he does. Talked about personalities and disordered personalities first half. Talking now on this part of the show about distances. This is another idea that I really had not heard of until I met you, Daniel. And what do you mean by distances?
Yeah, so since personality, the core of personality is a defense mechanism, I arrange my relationships in such a way that they give me safety and security. And of course, that the definition of safety and security varies from person to person depending upon our life experience. People can be quite dysfunctional and feel safe and secure in relationships that are very dysfunctional. So these are psychological and emotional distances, and that's why I see relationships as psychological and emotional distances, because we choose relationships and we engage in relationships that give us that kind of buffer, that safety and security. And relationships that don't make me feel safe or secure, I hold those people further away. Mm-hmm. So if we look at our relationships in that way, various relationships, you know, you with your boss at work or your employees, you have a certain distance that's maintained, and sure, that has to do with personal safety and mm-hmm. security, not just physical safety, but emotional safety. Mm-hmm. And in fact, maybe more so emotional safety.
Yeah, we heard that. We hear that term, safe people, or I don't feel safe. Mm-hmm. I mean, that it's kind of a buzzword these days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's what I call the primordial existential principle, which is I must survive. Now, of course, as believers, we know that we must decrease and he must increase, and that, you know, if any man, Christ said, if any man would be my disciple and lay down his life and or take up his cross and lay down his life and follow me, or take up his cross and follow me, which is a clue. We're taking up a cross and following Christ. And so the implication is that's the laying down of the life. But our nature is that I must survive. And so that's about safety and security. And that's, as I say, the core of our personality. And since the core of our personality is like that, as I say, we choose relationships, allowing some to be close, some to be keeping some at bay. In particular importance, as we've mentioned before, is the marriage relationship. We actually choose. In choosing, we kind of tend to repeat the distance that were modeled for us by our parental figures. So when Jack proposes marriage to Jill and she accepts without realizing it, they're actually drawn together because there's a familiarity in the psychological and emotional distances. That is, they feel safe and secure with one another. Mm-hmm. And so they're drawn toward that relationship. And when you go into the history of the families, you find where those kinds of distances were modeled. We distance in different ways. We distance in choices, many more choices, choices of how we communicate, choices of vocation. I've had, say, for example, I know several friends that are firemen, or I've met some people recently that work on the ferries, and I didn't realize that people that work on some of these long-distance ferries, actually, they're on shift, and then when they're off shift, they're sleeping on the ferry. They live on the ferry, and then they're on shift, and they do that for a few days, and then they go home for a few days, and they go back. Mm. And it's just like, so they're actually like a fireman who is oftentimes
at the station.
At the station for several days and then at home for several days. These are relationships that might require some distance. Other relationships that require distance that I've seen would be in the marriage context of marriage would be people who are married and in the military, to where, you know, they're married and he's deployed, or they're married and she's deployed. recently also have come across couples that are married and don't even live in the same house. So what's going on here is I've chosen this person as a spouse, but I need distance in my relationship. And so although I maybe didn't realize that when I got married that I was trying to repeat a certain distance, it just sort of plays out that way so that, you know, he works the night shift, she works the day shift, or they have occupations that take them on extended time away. There's nothing morally wrong with that, but you admittedly, not all couples would be okay with that. Some couples want that closeness. They want, you know, not a 9-to-5 job and coming home at night and being with the family, where other couples seem to be work better when they're more distant and they spend less time together. Mm-hmm. And this is because they're repeating a distance that was modeled for them.
Yeah, this really came out, I think, during the COVID lockdowns and stuff. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, people had to were cooped up together, yeah. And they weren't used to that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then the fireworks. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I was wondering if you got some more marital counseling calls during that time because we had no idea we couldn't stand each other.
It certainly did exacerbate a lot of things. Choices in habits, choices in hobbies. People choose hobbies that take them either away from people or take them toward people. Choices in appearance, the way people dress and the way people carry themselves. All these choices. Choices in quirks, moods, preferences, all the choices we make have something to do with safety and security. And so they all have to do with something about maintaining distance in relationships. Of course, we're talking about distances and mental health. A lot of times when I'm in counseling, we'll talk about family of origin then, because if a married couple, say, for example, comes and they're having a lot of trouble with trust, forgiveness, communication, vulnerability, intimacy, and that whole array of process kinds of things, and are having difficulty in that. And so we go on a little bit of a discovery mission, and we talk about family of origin, and we do what I call a genogram, which is kind of a family map, so family tree. Now, when I do a genogram, I'm looking for specific things. I'm looking for distancing behaviors. How did people in the family keep other people at distance? Did they do it through habits? Did they have addictions? Did they use humor to keep people away, to stay superficial? What was the communication like? Was there very little communication? All these rules and modes of being together. I'm looking for the distancing behaviors, choices in vocations. Dad was never home; he was in the military, or dad and mom ran a business and they were always at work 24/7, and so they, you know, all their communication was about work. And so you look at these different distancing behaviors and to try to explain how this couple, the setting in front of you, is somewhat wired for a certain kind of distance. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it becomes the problem of how do you close the distance, because that's really, you know, the goal of the relationship. It's kind of like a paradox or an irony that we're created Our natural bent is to survive. I must survive. And yet our God-given task or mission or part of it is to be intimately related to people. A book was written some decades ago now by a man named James Lynch, Medical Consequences of Loneliness. We know that, you know, we were created naked. Adam and Eve created naked, and I think that that has more to do with vulnerability than just not having clothes on. They were created vulnerable to one another. Mm. And then when they sinned, they didn't want to be vulnerable anymore, so they put on fig leaves, and kind of that's our condition today. Everybody wearing fig leaves, and we don't want to be vulnerable to one another, and it's that I must survive. So, but we also know, on the other hand, that people live longer and more healthy when they're in caring relationships. It isn't good to be alone. So
somebody knows the real me.
Yeah. And so in counseling with people, whether they're just trying to get along with friends or trying to find friends to grow their world, so to speak, and move toward relationships, a lot of it is healthy relationships have to find ways to close the distance. So that's a lot of what we talk about in marriage counseling is closing the distance, how to learn to be more vulnerable. And make choices, even though they're uncomfortable to begin with, but to make the choices that can make those kinds of intimate, close relationships possible.
Closing those distances, that is certainly a goal of marriage counseling. It's a goal of marriage. And if you're feeling particularly distant from your spouse and you need some help with this, people want to get in touch with you, Daniel. How do they do that?
Yeah, the phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, where you'll find these shows again in podcast. Offices Kirkland and Edmonds, and also doing Zoom for people that live distances out or have difficult schedules and need to fit something in like on a lunch break or something like that.
Okay, lots of options for help from Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor, and the Sound Mind broadcast here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.